Welcome to the ITE Talks Transportation Podcast from the Institute of Transportation Engineers. Each month, we'll bring you conversations with thought leaders in transportation on the future of the industry. Glad you can join us for the ITE Talks Transportation Podcast. I'm Bernie Wagenblast. This month, we're pleased to welcome Robin Phillips to the program. Robin is the Executive Director of the National Rural Transportation Assistance Program. Robin, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. I appreciate the chance to talk to your listeners and learn about what's going on and share with you what's happening with the rural and tribal programs.
Well, for those who are involved with rural and tribal transportation programs, they're hopefully already familiar with your organization. But for those listeners who maybe are not familiar with it, if you would, tell us a bit about RTAP's mission, your role in it, and some of the initiatives RTAP is currently involved with, please.
RTAP, we're funded through a cooperative agreement with FTA in the Rural and Targeted Transportation Division. And we are the designated technical assistance center for 5311 programs. So that's the rural, public, tribal, and intercity transportation. We're the other part. We're, you know, when you look at that MPO map and there's all those dark areas where you have urbanized areas, we're about how all that other space connects and connects into those urbanized areas. What we do is we work very closely with state departments of transportation around the country and the rural and tribal operators. And we have a review board that is advisory that helps us, and that's seven state departments of transportation and seven rural and tribal operators, so that we're always getting information from people on the ground who are trying to implement the federal programs. And our mission really is to assist transit programs through design, implementation of training and technical assistance projects and other support services. So we work with that board to develop new trainings, advise ones we have, develop web apps. We have a web builder, a GTFS builder, and we just implemented a cost allocation calculator, because as we all are trying to work together, one of the ways is sort of good fences make good neighbors and good cost allocation makes good partners.
Not quite as catchy, but it works.
Well, for transit people, it sounds great. And lately, we are initiating our own podcast, and I can talk about it later, but it's really looking for a way that our constituents and the people who are rural transit stakeholders can have a chance to engage more in depth and hear about some of the great stories that we always hear at, you know, on-site meetings when we go to state conferences, when we go to regional conferences. We always have that chance to, you know, interact one-on-one or be in sessions where people talk about the things that they're doing, and it gives us a chance to share those things. So we started the podcast to really engage with that. Then also we have been, you know, what we do is we aren't just training and technical assistance. We are looking in the DC office, I connect with the other federal agencies and the main liaison with FTA and the rural program at FTA, but also the planning program. We've been working with the safety implementation program, as people have been working on their asset management plans. And even if there aren't requirements, a lot of what is being required of transit that is larger, you need to be aware of it, and it needs to be implemented for smaller programs. And it's just not as complex, but it's important to know which vehicle you're going to be trading out, which kind of resources you need to be looking for. So we really try to scale training to the size of the people that we're working with. And that's communities under 50,000. And the vehicles, I mean, we work with a provider in, well, we work with RAFTA in Aspen, which is large buses, long distances, millions of miles. But also Oklahoma, they provided seven counties service to tribes, and they had 240 vehicles. So small can be very large. I work with people that have two vehicles or one vehicle and people that have that large number. We also have been participating with USDA and then Office of National Drug Control Policy on responding to the rural opioid crisis. And we also, that has been fundamentally trying to help other organizations, non-transit organizations, understand how to find transit. And you think, wait a minute, if it's there, why don't where they're advertising all the time, we're always reaching out. And it's like, no, I mean, literally people look around and they don't see a bus and they go, I don't have any transit. And that's true of people who are going to clinics to get treatment for dialysis or for opioids. And what it's got me engaged with is how, if you are a non-transit person, do you engage with transit to improve it in your community? And that's something that is really fundamental and reinforces pieces of the program that I think are really important. How, when you do that 5310 coordinated plan, that's where I tell them to go when they want to improve it is, well, what is, are you in there? Well, if you're not, you can go in there. You can be part of that. And if you are wanting to improve things, you have to get in the plan in order to be seen. You won't be, no one can see you in the transportation world unless you're in a plan. So it's a real cultural engagement. They're non-transit versus transit. And it hadn't been so clear to me as when I started trying to explain it to other people and help them understand transportation as a system. It's not just a thing, it's a vehicle. Mm-hmm. That's the manifestation of a whole lot of work and training and engagement to make accessibility and mobility available in your community. So it just really, it's been very interesting at the sort of the local or the state level with multiple agencies. But then we also are working with CDC, EPA, and the National Park Service, because the CDC does a couple of programs that are around accessing nutrition. Anything that involves access involves movement. And if it involves movement, then it involves people, moving people. And when you're moving people in highly rural areas, people with low income or people with disabilities, understanding how to find and use and work with transit is a real asset. So we also have been, we have initiatives. So that's like my outreach in DC. But at our headquarters offices in Woburn, we really do a lot of the management of our materials. And all our materials are available to any transit stakeholder online. It's not like we say, you have 51,000 people, so you cannot come to our website. Everything we have is available to people who are interested. And in fact, I know because I work on the FTA Transit Safety Work Group, that MARTA uses some of our stuff in training. And I think it's San Diego uses some of our stuff. They're free and available. And we have alcohol and drug and reasonable suspicion certifications available for free, as well as human trafficking, working with the National Human Trafficking Organization BOTL, Buses on the Lookout. We do START safety training so you can onboard your drivers. We're redoing our customer service to be more interactive through our e-learning system. And that's one of the things that we've done in the last 5 years is move as many of our trainings as possible and all of our new ones into hybrid format of having availability booklets, but also being available in training modules online that are available anywhere. So we have a lot going on.
It certainly sounds like it. When you look at the news, you tend to see more coverage of urban public transportation systems than you do rural or tribal public transportation systems. What are some of the unique challenges or the greatest challenges that those kinds of smaller systems face compared with the larger systems that we hear so much more about?
Yeah, well, I mean, fundamentally, they're often not as visible because many of the rural systems are demand response systems, so they don't have bus stops. So that's not visible. Everything that puts a bus out there, so actually one of our podcast interviews that we've just done is with Christy Warner out in Kimball Transit in Kimball, Nebraska. And she just started 3 years ago as a transit manager and went from one vehicle to 10 vehicles. And she is all over it. She's like, her buses have got big wraps that are colorful and grab the eye, say what the bus does, gives you a phone number to call, gives you the website. So rural has to fight more to be visible, I think, because of that lack of infrastructure. And sometimes just the assumption that people in rural communities just think there isn't anything there. So the resources, they often have no dedicated funding. Larger urban areas usually have allocated federal funds. Sometimes some states have more of their money discretionary. So you might not have as much dedicated funding. And the amount of money that the federal money is, as opposed to how much it actually costs to run a system, is just a part of it. Finding and training staff, if you're in a smaller community, there's just fewer people that are going to be there and fewer people potentially that have the capacity. Maintenance, I know that I've worked with rural operators who had to drive 70 miles to have, or even 120 miles to have their lifts worked on because they didn't know or didn't have access to a trained technician for their drawn lift. So those are part of it. And then they have the destinations that you think, oh, they're just going to go to an urban area. Well, maybe in this urbanized area, they have the college and a hospital, but it's another city entirely another direction that has the specialist that you need or the shopping of the type that you need. A friend said that she had to go, 50 miles to buy her daughter's shoes because in the town she lived in, her daughter, they didn't have little girl's shoes. So there are a lot of different ways that people are pulled. Sometimes, especially in rural areas, the manufacturing or work sites are distant from town as well. And so you're struggling more with distance because the costs are the same. A bus costs in the rural area about between 60 and 120 an hour to run, depending on the type of vehicle, the person, the area that you're in. But it is a challenge, but it also, I think, has a lot of strengths because the people who are the transit manager may be the food bank manager, the LIHEAP person, they are sitting on the planning commission, they're part of the Rotary. And what I have found working with rural transits is the people who are running them play several roles within the community, and it gives the opportunity in a good system for it to have that real responsive feedback loop to the needs that are happening in a smaller scale so that you can just turn on a dime and try something new. Oh, that didn't work? Well, that's fine. You didn't spend years and years, feasibility studies, and hundreds of thousands of dollars buying equipment. You just ran the bus a little differently for a while and people loved it. Or, it didn't really catch on. And you turn around and you do something else. And it really was a learning for me to see a town of 2,500 have a commuter van, a seasonal shuttle, demand response services, and a circulator. Also a regional connector that connected into the intercity program. And that, was 75 miles away from the community. So there, a lot of imagination goes in, but also a really close connection to what's happening in the community. So I think that it's an opportunity for very creative responses to the problems that we face. And I think it's easier sometimes to scale something up than it is to scale it down. So I think of the rural environment as when, especially with transit, where we can try a lot of things and we can get feedback on those and try another thing.
Mm-hmm. We've seen with COVID-19 how it's impacted the transportation system as a whole. And particularly in urban areas, we've seen that where traffic volume has dropped precipitously, especially during the height of the pandemic back in April and March, and ridership on systems like New York's MTA dropped, say, 90%. How has it affected smaller systems? What impact has there been from COVID-19 on some of these more rural and tribal systems that aren't, again, as in the news as what we see more frequently.
It's been pretty amazing. Some of them just shut down entirely. Some of the tribal systems basically shut their borders. That, you know, the threat from COVID is existential for people in some places. And so there wasn't really any plan around that. I know that what happened in some of those places where the transit just shut down and they closed up shop, so to speak, emergency management ambulance crew picked up the dialysis and the medical, you know, medical necessary trips. Gradually, that's sort of been coming back. The other thing that I think is kind of interesting with the Mississippi Band of Choctaw, their manager said, hey, we started getting calls from people we hadn't worked with because they needed food. And so we started delivering groceries and food. And that happened also in New Jersey, where they basically flipped their program around. So the drivers were picking up groceries and medicine and delivering. And that kept the drivers safe and the people that they were serving safe. And at this point, I think people are kind of moving out of that a little. People have jury-rigged barriers all over, like clear shower curtains or just things that one can protect their drivers, very precious commodity as our riders, but the drivers are really important part of the system and also make people feel safe getting on the bus. And there's been real using social distancing and getting a hold of the EMS people to work with, getting materials, getting supplies, changing cleaning protocols. One program took vehicles that reached the end of their useful life, its useful life, and they got a grant for creating a mobile food pantry so that they could move the food shelf around the community to get food out there. Also, one program started a volunteer drivers program. And that sounds funny, except volunteer drivers generally are one-to-one. And so it's easier to socially distance, and they worked with their accessible vehicles so that family members could be trained for people who were needing an accessible trip and access that trip safely. So what has happened, I think, is that relationship of transit access and mobility has been deepened. The understanding of that is more not just I'm going to move this person from here to here, but I'm making sure that this person has access to what they need and that we are responsive to what we're hearing, what people are asking for, and what our community needs to keep people safe and healthy and living in our communities.
We've seen over the past few years how technology is playing more and more of a role when it comes to transportation, particularly public transit. For instance, people using apps to find out when their vehicle is coming or to pay their fares and things like that. And obviously during this pandemic, we've seen people switch from going into an office and working from home remotely. But all of those things require fairly robust internet system where you can have access, good cellular coverage. I would imagine in many of the rural areas that your agencies serve, that doesn't exist. So how do you use technology and what is the role of technology when it comes to rural and tribal transportation?
It is kind of fascinating. First of all, it's really, really important. And there really is a need for more consistent broadband access. But technology, as we know, is very quick to respond to issues. So I was mentioning about the Kimball Transit story. They implemented a really simple data capture and management tool that allowed them to allocate trips, capture pre-trip, post-trip information, and had AVL integrated into the tablet. And that if you were out of range, it would just reconnect when it got in, and it kept the information if they were out of range. It does keep the information when they're out of range. So the technology is sort of gap filled. And in the Eastern Band of Cherokee, they hadn't realized this, but their riders were sharing information when they were on the bus through texting, because it takes less data to move a text than it does to have a phone call. So that opened up, you know, immediately that transit manager was like, hey, if we need to get a hold of people, you know, when we're on a trip or we're, you know, driving, we can have text happening. And so people are generally very practical, and that the issues, one of the things I was talking about partnering with these other federal agencies, I spent a bunch of time working with, SAMHSA to get the Google Transit visible on their site, because they were using just the map, but they weren't, you know, and you could click into that and you could get driving directions. But wait a second, you can click into that and get transit directions. And one of the things that's really key is helping rural transits that are able, if they're a fixed route or deviated fixed, to get into Google Transit, so that when people are looking for transit, they see it and they don't have to call the senior center or the community center, or know they need to call, you know, or go 10 clicks into the city website to find it. So the technology can be a really great way of being visible where people are looking for you. And we try to assist people with getting visible in GTFS and our partners. So when SAMHSA redid their site, they put a little Google graphic that when you click on it, it'll take you into the directions and into the transit directions. And now my example for them was I showed them Manhattan, Kansas, you know, how to get to a treatment facility in Manhattan, Kansas. And I was like, there you go. And you wouldn't think necessarily that there was a system there that could help you, but that's the first step, is seeing what's there and having that accessible to everybody. The transportation in rural areas is very multimodal. I lived out in La Grande, Oregon, which is a population of about 13,000, that is about 150 miles from any place that is MPO size. So the people in the area will, I noticed this, people would get on their bikes to go to the grocery store or to go to coffee in the morning. And when I talked to other people about it, they were like, oh yeah, there's a lot more cyclists and, you know, at recreation. And I said, no, when somebody at 6 a.m. on a one speed wearing jeans, that's not recreational cycling. And I would see, you know, older women with groceries hanging off their handlebars. That is not recreation. And when it was snowing, I worked at the DOT, I looked and there was a, on the sidewalk in the middle of winter, there would be multiple trails of people walking in the snow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, the thing is for us, you know, whether we're large or small, to think about how people are traveling and see how we can help them travel. And so that, I think technology can help us by helping us find routes, find vehicles, help the smaller systems capture the information and do their reporting for FTA easier and more efficiently, so that they have more time to build the relationships they need in their communities and can really work to focus on serving that community and knowing what the community wants, rather than, oh my gosh, did I put in my NTD report correctly? And so there's just a lot of, I think, opportunity with rural areas to help people implement planning that integrates those pieces and then building a system that is really responsive to the community.
You made mention earlier about the new podcast program that RTAP is going to be having, RTAP Go. Tell us a bit about that and some of the things that we might be hearing on that, please.
Well, we looked at this. We've been looking at having a video presence and online. We have a YouTube channel that has our webinars and stuff on it. But when COVID-19 hit, we all of a sudden were not able to travel to state conferences or regional or national conferences. We weren't able to have meetings with people. And one of the big things about working in the transit field, in the transit industry, is meeting your peers, learning from them, finding out about what they're doing. And we thought, how could we do this? How could we feel part of that? You know, more than just a virtual happy hour or a presentation on how to do X. So we thought, wait a minute, we have all these amazing operators who live all over the country, rural and tribal. Let's do something that highlights their organizations and gives them a chance to tell the story of the transit culture and role and what transit means and is in their community on a more, you know, personable, informal basis. So actually, our first one is up in northern Minnesota with the Netlick Chippewa Boys Fort Chippewa. Anyway, so Jenny Rowland is the transit manager, and she's our first person. And what one of the reasons why I invited her to be the first person, besides the fact she's very personable, and I really think she's a great ambassador for rural transit. So I was talking to her, and the time that she was on the RTAP board, and she said that they had a bus welcoming ceremony, a drum ceremony to welcome the buses, and they sing a safety song, and they have no accidents. This is 11 years. So what it made me start thinking about is how does transit invite the community to own it? And so that's really what we're talking about up there, and looking at how the buses have a lot of cultural relevance in the Netlick area and with the Boys Fort Chippewa. And that's true everywhere. It made me think about the big check things and the ribbon cutting, and how it was a way for, and it is a way for, local government and the community to welcome that new vehicle in and that new asset, that community asset. And I think it's made me think about other ways that we can enrich that, so that it's clear how much that vehicle belongs to the community. The transit system is a steward. And so this is a chance. We talked with Kimball and West Virginia. We're going out down to Florida. Well, we're basically connecting with different systems that we work with the managers, and who are doing something interesting, taking a different approach or engaging different parts of the community in ways that may give other transit operators ideas about how they could potentially partner and build relationships that they hadn't thought about. I still run into situations where people go to the transit operator and say, oh, we need XYZ assistance moving your people in treatment. And the transit saying, this is when we run our system and this is the way it is. And that in so many ways is a lost opportunity, because even if that transit program is not able at the moment to respond to the needs of a group in their community, one of the things about transit that's wonderful is it can. You know, you can say, what, you know, who needs this? When do they need it? How much do they need? You know, how many people need this? What kind of capacity? And you can identify a project. You can describe that in a way that it can go into a plan and then can be seen by other people and discussed and evaluated for funding. But if it just is, no, we can't do it, you lose that. So really, the learning, I think, will go hopefully more than one direction. You know, it's not just from the transit operators to other transit operators, but we work with the HRSA Community Health Network and the SAMHSA Treatment Network. And I did a presentation for the National Association of State Court Officials and Northeastern Judges. And really, it's they all have their court culture, and they get to the point where they're going to give someone a court date. If they check and see whether the person has transportation and schedule that court date during times when that person could actually reach the court with transit in their area, that is a win. That's a huge win.
We've been talking on this edition of the ITE Talks Transportation Podcast with Robin Phillips, the Executive Director of the National Rural Transportation Assistance Program. Robin, thanks so much for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you. This has been great.